and grandma's wallpaper. You know, that was a big thing back in the 70s, and God bless him. It looked amazing on the wall in 1973. I particularly like the silver kind. When we go in and see that, it's like, so you can almost see your reflection, like silver, black stripes, you know, those. But any type of wallpaper that has the glue behind it, that's where mold loves to live. There's a lot of moisture that gets trapped behind that vinyl wallpaper. It's like wrapping a plastic bag around some sheetrock in water. You know, you might as well just expect some mold to start growing behind there.
This is the Secret Life of Mold podcast. Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. I'm so excited to talk to you today. I have a special guest from our Mold Inspection Sciences team, Mike Marshall. Mike is a Director of Operations and Business Development Manager. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Craig. I'm really excited to be here today. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you as well. Today, we're going to give everyone the 411 about mold. As a certified mold inspector, I see many different situations and unusual conditions in homes, apartments, and businesses. I also hear comments and read information that sometimes makes me scratch my head. So I thought it would be great to meet with Mike to address some common myths and give you relevant, accurate, and useful information about mold. But let's begin with more information about you, Mike. Feel free to tell our listeners about your background.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking me that. So I was born and raised on the south side of Chicago, lived there for most of my life, but I got to Texas as fast as I could. I had a pretty unique upbringing, in my opinion. I was born to very young parents who worked a lot, so it afforded me a lot of time with my grandparents and especially my grandmother. I learned a lot from her and from all of them, but the thing that I saw the most from my family growing up was everyone's commitment to helping people as much as we could and, you know, just doing the right thing for no other reason than that's just what you were supposed to do. So I feel like I had a really strong upbringing, you know, although my parents were very young. I'm a relationship builder at heart. I find great value in the personal relationships I've built over the last 20 plus years of being in business development and operations management. And I'm especially proud of the fact that I still have great relationships across the nation with people from companies that I haven't worked for in 20 years. But I've kind of been that guy my entire life. I went to 4 different grade schools, a new middle school, 3 different high schools. So I learned early on that I wanted and needed to build new relationships at all these new places if I was going to be happy and successful. And I still feel that way today. That's why it was so easy to align with the leadership team here at Mold Inspection Sciences Texas. Our owners, Michael and Nathan, were just two regular guys that were childhood friends who decided to go into the business of helping people. When I met both of them and heard their story, it was easy to see that this is where I belong.
That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that, Mike. We appreciate that. Mike, can you tell us how and why Mold Inspection Sciences Texas was created?
Yes, thanks for asking that. In 2001, Michael Baines started Mold Inspection Sciences in California. A few years later, Michael brought in Nathan to help with the growing demands of the business. They continued to build upon what was already going very well. And in 2006, they decided to open up the state of Texas and created Mold Inspection Sciences Texas. They've been working alongside each other for 12, 13 years now, and everything is going great.
Thanks for sharing this information, Mike. I think it'd be helpful for us to begin to explain how and why the mold industry is regulated in Texas and how that is different than other states.
Sure, absolutely. Back in 2004, the state of Texas regulated the mold industry. It was basically an attempt to regulate and professionalize the mold remediation and assessment industry through licensing requirements, some minimum performance standards, documentation requirements, and then obviously some penalties that go along with that if you don't follow the regulations. Some of this stuff may translate into higher costs in the short term, but the ultimate benefit of it all is that it eliminates the abuses and conflicts of interest that used to plague this industry in years past. And it really benefits the consumer and provides a more cohesive atmosphere for mold assessment companies and mold remediation companies to work more collaboratively. There's a more consistent quality of work from company to company when they're following the regs. There's a clear approval process for remediation projects, definitions of the roles and responsibilities and who's supposed to do what. And then also, you know, there was a lot of lawsuits years and years ago, and it helps to reduce those and some legal liability due to work that's not up to par or not up to the regulations. And it also creates more documentation that helps to prove insurability of homes and property from a Department of Insurance standpoint, and then ultimately lowering maintenance costs and addressing all the underlying causes of moisture is, you know, always a concern as well.
Got it. I tell you, in other states that are not regulated, it can be a challenge at times for us, primarily for the consumer, to really know, are they getting accurate information? Are they getting honest information in regards to whether there's a mold problem or not? So that's fantastic that Texas has those regulations in place to really protect that consumer and let them know that we're going to separate out the two industries so they know that they're getting an honest assessment. I thought maybe we would just talk about some other common questions that we get when the consumers call in to Mold Inspection Sciences. Some of the things that not only are they curious about and ask Colin, but also kind of maybe some misconceptions and things that we hear that we know are maybe not always accurate, but people hear in the world out there, so to speak. So I thought maybe we might just start with just some general information about mold. What are molds and where do they grow?
Mold is part of the fungi kingdom, and it's found everywhere on Earth. You know, we breathe it, we eat it, we drink it. It is everywhere. Some molds are good, some molds are bad. Thousands of species out there. And Mother Nature's intent for it was to break down organic material. And in doing that, it has to have a way to spread itself. That's where, you know, the mold sporulation comes in. It can grow on any organic material that has moisture in it. So whether it was man-made or it was natural organic material, it can grow on any of those things that have moisture.
Right, that's so true. And that's exactly, you know, mold is a very important part of our ecosystem, and it plays a critical role in breaking down materials in our environment, but not such a good thing when they're inside our home growing. Let me ask you this, Mike. What can someone do to prevent mold growth in their home or office or any workspace?
That's a very good question. Mold requires basically three things to grow, and that is some spores of mold. It's the beginning. An organic material or a food source, and in moisture, more specifically water. In a home or office, we look to keep the indoor areas free from moisture. Free from moisture intrusions, high humidity, condensation, things along those lines. Because if you eliminate one of the things that it needs to grow, it won't grow. You can have mold in your home inside your wall. If it doesn't have a moisture source, it will not grow. If you take away the food source, it will not grow. When I say food source, we're talking about organic material, drywall, tape, glue, building materials that we normally have in the home. We're not going to take those away. So basically, we remove the moisture and we can prevent mold growth.
That is so true. Moisture control is truly the key to preventing mold growth. You know, we try to educate our clients every day about the moisture load of a home or a building, and there are ways to control that at times. So you're right in the fact that moisture control is the way to control mold. Mike, let me ask you, how do you know if you have a mold problem? How does someone, a homeowner or someone in a workplace, what are the indicators of a mold problem? How do you think they suspect they may have a mold problem?
The most common way to tell we have a mold problem is something starts to smell funny, or you see something that doesn't look so right in your home. Some discoloration on the wall, some staining, something like that. It potentially could be a mold problem. You know, you're looking at that source of moisture on the ceiling, drywall, wherever you're seeing that, you could have an issue. But sometimes you don't see something. It may be where, you know, somebody may be getting sick in a certain area of the home, a child's bedroom, a den, office, bathroom, you know, somebody spends amount of time in there and they start feeling sick. They start having some headaches or something along those lines. You don't always see it. So the best way to address that is to get a mold assessment company involved. We'll come out, we'll do an inspection. Part of our inspection is that moisture intrusion inspection. We're looking for sources of moisture, water intrusion, roof leaks, penetrations from the outside where water can come in. Staining on the inside, you know, that's where our tools of the trade, so to speak, come in. Our infrared cameras, moisture meters, our inspector's eyes. Those are some of the main things we use to basically address whether or not we could potentially have a mold problem. Then there's our sampling. We'll take potential samples of areas where we may not see mold growth, but somebody's reported a problem. Somebody's reported a past moisture issue in that area. Somebody reported that it seems to be this room where I have the most symptoms. We may take some air samples in those room and find out what's really going on in there. If we see something that looks like microbial growth or mold to the naked eye, we'll take a surface sample, find out what's going on, what type of mold that is. That is the best way to start, is to get a mold assessment company involved to do that full inspection or limited inspection of an area, depending on the size of the problem in that home or office.
Right. So important for people to realize that oftentimes they will notice an odor, they will notice some discoloration or staining. But we say this all the time, sometimes what you see or smell is the tip of the iceberg for what you may have going on. So it is critical to have a professional expert who is trained and experienced in identifying and recognizing building defects and water intrusion, ventilation. There's so many things building science related that go into performing a mold assessment. And it's just critical to have somebody who is really qualified to determine if there is a mold problem. Again, sometimes we just see a very small area of discoloration or a slight musty odor, but that may be an indication of a more significant problem that only an expert will be able to detect and determine.
One of the things that we tend to run into a little bit down here in Texas is the people who try to initially self-remediate and they don't assess the problem. They just, well, you know, it just looks like a little bit in this corner right here. I think I'll just cut this little piece out right here. And by the time some of that microbial growth gets through the drywall, you hit it right on the head when you said it's just the tip of the iceberg, because likely it's been growing inside that wall for quite some time before you see it. And then to try and self-remediate or try and self-correct the problem, sometimes you're doing a little bit more damage than you are good. You start opening up walls, you start opening up some drywall that you think is no big deal, and next thing you know, you've cross-contaminated two or three rooms, and now you have a much bigger problem. So yeah, great point on the tip of the iceberg. That's definitely where you want to get a mold assessment company involved.
You know, that's a good segue into another question we get, and that is, how do I get rid of mold in my home? You just mentioned that the self-remediation, depending on the type of mold and the conditions, can oftentimes compromise the air quality even more and produce airborne mold spores that could potentially be a health risk. So how does the homeowner know what are the steps to clean it? I know that we oftentimes, of course, always recommend that assessment so that we can provide our clients with that scope of work or recommendation for the protocol for the cleaning, which is really, in almost all cases, the very best thing to do. So just kind of share with us how mold remediation works from your perspective.
Yeah, Craig, that's a great question, and thanks for asking. It's one of my favorite things to talk to clients about is getting rid of the mold in my home. And it's one of my favorite parts of the regulations down here in Texas is that the assessment company does come out and perform the initial assessment, which basically determines the scope of the problem. So many times we see homeowners and business owners who are ready to just start ripping out material when maybe it's not so necessary to rip out as much material as they think. That's where we come in and we create that scope of work to figure out the best plan. It's not just to create this removal of materials plan, but it's to limit that plan because we want to just do what's absolutely necessary to get rid of the problem. So if it's cutting out a half a foot of drywall or 3 feet of drywall, we want to make sure you're not cutting out 9 feet of drywall to get rid of a problem that's only 2 feet. The other ways depends on the material that it's on. It might just take a cleaning depending on if it's a porous material or not. If it's a porous material and it's saturated into that porous material, we may have to remove those materials, but it depends on the type of material that it's on. You may just be able to clean it if it's on a tile, non-porous surface, or we may have to remove the material.
Yeah, every case is different. And I think that that's a great point, Mike, in the fact that it really takes, you know, a trained assessor to be able to help our clients determine what the next steps are, what really should be done in what order to properly remove the mold, clean, you know, structural materials, you know, behind porous materials and so forth, and do it in a way that, you know, through proper containment, air filtration, all the measures that are taken in that remediation process that we put forth in our protocol, so that it's done right and it's done in a safe manner that ultimately will protect, you know, the homeowner or the business owner to limit any potential harmful exposure to mold. And that's so critical. So thank you for that clarification, that information on it. It is complicated and each situation is different. And that's really what our role is, to help people, you know, determine what the next steps are. Moving on to another question. If mold is everywhere, what makes it harmful?
My opinion is, yes, mold is everywhere. We breathe it, we drink it, we eat it sometimes. And, you know, I said this earlier, it wasn't meant to be trapped inside of structures that have organic material and the potential for moisture, either intrusion or high humidity levels where it can feed that mold inside of a structure. It's when mold has that perfect environment for growth. There's spores, there's a food source, and there's that moisture. That's really where the concentration of mold goes up from the outside. We take that outside baseline reading of what the air is actually holding on a specific day in a specific area. And then when we compare that inside, if we have a very high concentration, that's usually determining that we have a localized mold growth problem. And what makes that so harmful is that concentration. And, you know, it's not harmful to everybody. You know, we see it a lot of times where, you know, a family's in a home, they have potentially or confirmed a significant mold problem that's only affecting one family member or a part of their family or their dog or something like that. So where it gets harmful is in that concentration in a certain area, in a certain room, or in, you know, a structure.
Right. There is a big difference between certain types of molds as well and that concentration level or exposure level. And duration, you know, how long does somebody spend in a home? You know, we hear a lot that one member of the family is having some symptoms or having some health challenges, whereas another one is not, or the rest of the family in some cases is not. And a lot of it depends on how much time they spend in the home and especially the affected area. So a lot of variables there. It's interesting. We actually worked with the Dr. Phil show back in April. He had a guest on his show who was having some health problems and believed that she was actually being poisoned in her apartment, that there was something in the air that was making her sick. Dr. Phil brought our company in, Mold Inspection Sciences, to do a full investigation and an assessment for mold and other chemicals as well. We did some VOC testing to try to rule out or determine whether or not there was any exposure to chemicals. Interestingly enough, it was concluded that actually her apartment had a mold problem and she was being exposed to levels of mycotoxins that were causing some issues with her brain function and her overall health. Through our assessment, our moisture testing, our laboratory testing for mold, we did ambient air testing, surface sampling. Through all of that, it was concluded that she was indeed being affected by mold and causing her some pretty serious health problems that were really attributed to mold exposure. Mike, how long does it take for a water intrusion event or a water leak to actually create mold? How long does it take for mold to start growing?
So again, it's one of those things where we had to have the perfect storm, right? A water leak doesn't always lead to mold growth, but given the right atmosphere and a food source and organic material, it's saturating. You're looking at 24 to 48 hours in the right conditions.
Yeah, it happens fast, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Hey, Mike, can you tell us, what is the difference between mildew and mold?
That's a great question that we get, you know, all the time. Well, isn't it just mildew? Well, technically speaking, mildew is mold. It's a different type of mold, not normally a toxic mold, but it is mold. It just depends on where the growth is. Normally, we see those types of growth, mildew growth, in bathroom areas, in showers, kitchens, things like that, where there's normally quite a consistent moisture source, but not always a food source. So it is mold, but not normally a toxigenic type, if that makes sense.
Got it. Yeah, it definitely does make sense. Even with mildew, what people determine or classify as mildew, there can oftentimes even be other types of mold present in addition to the mildew or the surface growth, depending on the situation. So from my experience, just because somebody, you know, sees a little bit of mold growth around a shower or something, it may be kind of a non-issue, but there also may be some water intrusion and other types of mold growing. So you can't always assume it's just mildew.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, sometimes it starts with that call. We have some smell in our bathroom. We go in there, we're looking at the shower, quite a bit of mildew on the shower that's right up next to where it meets the drywall. And then there's that little piece behind the drywall. And again, we go back to that tip of the iceberg, right? Yeah, it's mildew right here, but right on the edge right here is where we start getting into that drywall where that shower overspray is happening. And it's consistent on this drywall right here that we run into this a lot with kids. And just outside that shower door, that shower area where they forgot to close the door all the way, or they forgot to pull the shower curtain back. And it's right where the edge of the tile meets the drywall, right? And we have a lot of that mildewy type stuff growing there, but it leads into a significant mold problem sometimes just outside that area. So yeah, you're exactly right. Like sometimes it's just that tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Mike, speaking about mildew and mold, there's a lot of different types of mold, a lot of colors that mold will grow on different, depending on the substrate that it's growing on. It can be purple, it can be yellow, it can be green, it can be white, it can be dark in color. When a lot of people see black mold or mold that's dark in color and they call it black mold, is all black mold the same?
No, not particularly. And the word or the phrase black mold, that's like the scary phrase. But in reality, like you said, mold is many different colors. And it's true, a lot of concerning types of mold like Stachybotrys are commonly black in color. That is true. But there are a lot of molds, like you said, that don't have a black appearance. But guess what? They can still cause those health effects for someone to have an adverse reaction to it. The color of the mold sometimes has no effect on it. You know, it can be pretty much any color. And sometimes it's depending on what it's growing on, what the food source is, can have an effect on that. So any mold growth of any color is potentially a sign of a water intrusion problem, which gets inside all of our building materials and can definitely lead down a path of remediation and can definitely get quite costly in some cases.
Hey, Mike, is bleach an effective treatment for mold?
I laugh because we hear, you know, we get that a lot. Go over there and rub some bleach on it and we'll be all right. A lot of times what happens is on the surface, it appears to get rid of the mold initially. But what we see all the time is that they do that. It may take the surface mold off, but it's on a porous material. It's on some drywall and it's inside the drywall. Or guess what? By the time you see it on the other side of the drywall, that's a significant problem. It's taken quite a while to eat its way through that drywall and get to where you can see it. So if you've just wiped off that surface, you can almost guarantee that there's a much more significant problem on the backside of that drywall that you didn't clean. So it's only a matter of time before that mold growth definitely returns. It may take it a little while to return in that area, but you can rest assured it's going to return.
Absolutely. I always kind of compare using bleach on, especially on sheetrock or what some people call drywall, porous building materials. Using bleach to me is kind of like pulling a weed without getting the roots out, because mold will grow into the substrate. And so because bleach is about 90% water anyway, what you're doing is you're just taking off the top of the weed, not getting the roots, and then you're adding water, which is the source or the cause of mold to grow. So many times we see that mold comes back even stronger, even more concentrated than even before the bleach was used. Truth of the matter is, bleach is just a very caustic chemical, and a lot of people are very sensitive to bleach. So definitely no longer the go-to for cleaning up mold, and we would never suggest it on a porous building material anyway. Mike, can you just paint over mold and seal it to prevent regrowth?
Wow, the two of those questions right there are the things we hear so many times. It's that out of sight, out of mind mentality that you can cover it on the surface and the problem goes away, right? It's like trying to treat cancer with Neosporin. It's just not an effective treatment. You have to remove the source. That's where it starts. We have to remediate the source, get to the problem, understand with a scope of it how much it is, remove that. I'm not saying we can't use paint. There are definitely encapsulants that we do use post-cleaning, post-removal of materials, post-fixing the actual problem. But just covering up with paint, like I said, it's band-aiding a problem that is absolutely going to return 100% of the time. I firmly believe it.
That is such a great term to use, a band-aid. I agree. Cleaning a surface with bleach and then painting over it is truly a band-aid and not addressing the root cause of that mold growth. And that's the most important thing to start with. Let's talk about bathrooms, Mike. What can be done to control mold in bathrooms?
Keep your kids from taking showers in the bathroom or baths ever. I kid, obviously, but it's a moisture intrusion issue. And let's face it, the youngsters, my little guys, they forget to pull the door closed or they forget to pull the shower curtain all the way. And it's really about moisture control. Bathrooms are the highest humidity areas of the home normally. Poor ventilation in bathrooms is quite commonly the source of that high humidity. No fans running. Wife is taking super hot showers, long baths, things of that nature. Because us guys don't do that, right? But just kidding. It's about that moisture. It needs a source. It needs the material to grow on, but then it also needs that source of moisture. It's more about that moisture control. My wife is always on me about using the squeegee in the shower, right? Getting the water off the walls. And she doesn't know anything about mold like I do, but I guess maybe it's just me being lazy. But that's what happens. Excess moisture gets left in the shower, gets left in the tub, in the sink. It's evaporating. It's a closed off area. Then the next guy comes in, there's another shower happening. So there's a lot of moisture in that area. And it just provides that atmosphere for mold growth. You know, like we talked about the three things. If there's mold spores present, there's a food source, and then we give it water, it's like, this is where I want to grow. Some of the things people can do to prevent that, like I said, get the water off the walls in the shower. Get them off the areas that are next to the drywall. The people who are taking showers in there, if you do have some shower overspray, wipe it up immediately. Don't let it sit on that drywall. Maintaining your grout and caulking in the bathroom, which is, you know, where we have the most caulk is in that bathroom, preventing moisture intrusions and water damage, because, you know, that's where that potential microbial growth starts happening. If you got carpeting in your bathroom, shame on you. Who told you that was a good idea? It holds a lot of water. So you're going to be looking at that subfloor eventually. You know, what happens to a carpet when you get out of the shower? It retains moisture. You're not going to come in there and wet vac your carpet every time you get out of the shower. So if your grandmother told you it was a good idea to put carpet in the bathroom, then, you know, God bless her, but you should remove it immediately. The other place that we find conducive to mold growth is, again, behind grandma's wallpaper. You know, that was a big thing back in the 70s, and God bless him. It looked amazing on the wall in 1973. I particularly like the silver kind. When we go in and see that, it's like, so you can almost see your reflection, like silver, black stripes, you know, those.
Right.
We've all seen that one, right? But any type of wallpaper that has the glue behind it, that's where mold loves to live. There's a lot of moisture that gets trapped behind that vinyl wallpaper. It's like wrapping a plastic bag around some sheetrock in water. You know, you might as well just expect some mold to start growing behind there. Some of the things that they can do is just remove those types of materials. Don't use those. The most common things, you're always looking below your sink and around the toilets for leaks or things of that nature. But some of the things that people don't think about are the carpeting and the wallpaper. They're like things that make the house look and feel a little bit more like home, but they are really conducive to that microbial growth.
You know, sometimes I find too, when there's mold growth on windows in rooms near a bathroom, let's say, you know, you've got three bedrooms and there's a hallway bathroom. A lot of times when I talk to my clients, I find that they don't probably use their exhaust fan long enough, and they have the door open when they go out of the bathroom after the shower. They turn the light off and turn the fan off, and that moisture just kind of goes out of the bathroom and into the adjacent rooms. And then oftentimes, at least in my area, when the temperature outside is pretty cold, you'll get some condensation on the windows. It's, you know, the window is the coldest surface of a building. The dew point will be lower and you'll get condensation and mold growth. A lot of people don't realize that if they simply ran their exhaust fan in their bathroom for about another 20 minutes after their shower, 30 minutes ideally, it would eliminate, maybe not completely, but oftentimes it'll help reduce the amount of mold growth on those windows because you're controlling your moisture. A lot of the newer bath fans, the higher end fans, have automated controls and humidistats built into them. So they'll run as long as they need to draw down that humidity level in the bathroom. I think that's the technology that's out there is just phenomenal for controlling moisture in bathrooms. So I agree, a lot of things that can be done in bathrooms to prevent it. And it's almost always moisture related for sure.
And I'll tell you that my wife is great for the mold industry because every time I get out of the shower, I'm leaving that fan going and she's yelling at me to turn the fan off, turn the fan off, because she's usually sleeping right outside the door there. But yeah, we're going to have some mold growth in there for sure.
Yeah. Another good tip for controlling mold in bathrooms is you can install a timer switch rather than an on-off switch, like a light switch for your fan, your bathroom exhaust fan. Simply installing a timer switch where there's buttons to control the intervals of time that the fan will be on, and then just training everybody in the family or anyone living in the home that you want to push that longest duration time and let that fan run. And it's another thing that I find is helpful because most people, again, they'll either not use the fan because it's too loud. That's a deterrent for use of bath fans, older fans especially, of course, or they just don't simply run them long enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that potentially getting your kids and your wife to remember to press that button, though, that's a whole nother podcast, Craig.
Yes, that's so true. That's so true. whole training there. And Mike, if I don't see mold, can there be a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reasons we perform assessments is because of that person who is getting sick. They don't see anything. They don't smell anything. So we come in, we use our infrared camera to see if there's any moisture detected. You cannot see the actual moisture intrusion. You can actually not even see any type of staining at all, and definitely have a considerable water intrusion and or mold issue happening behind that surface. That's where that inspection really comes in handy for homeowners and business owners, because they may not be able to see it just yet or smell it just yet. The tools of the trade, we talk about it a lot, is, you know, our infrared camera, moisture meter, our sampling methods. And we take an air sample in an area where we have picked up some moisture with our infrared camera, and we uncover that just behind that wall where we didn't see anything or smell anything is a considerable mold problem. But we caught it early because we tested, because we came in and assessed it, and really saves people quite a bit of money and potential illness when we find that early. So yeah, you can absolutely have a mold problem that's not seen. Again, we go into talking about behind wallpaper. That's a huge one that will mask microbial growth, mold growth behind a wall, because it is made of vinyl. It isn't a porous material. It will trap smells and moisture and mold inside of it. And before you know it, it's a considerable problem. So yes, the answer is yes. You can absolutely have a problem even if you don't see it.
Yeah, there's so many times where there's no visible mold growth yet, but there may be hidden mold growth. I was actually on an assessment a couple months ago. The homeowner had an odor down in his basement. It was a finished basement. And he showed me the room and I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a pretty distinctful mold odor. But there was no visible mold growth at all, and really very limited visual indications of water staining or damage, just really not much to see, and home was in great condition. But there was definitely an odor. And what was interesting is this homeowner's dog came down. His name was Zeke, and Zeke comes down. He's a black lab, just a great dog, and he comes down into the room, and he hadn't been down in the basement this entire time that I'd been down there. He comes into this room and all of a sudden he just starts barking and he starts scratching at the carpet right in the area where the odor was the strongest. And he definitely sensed something. So even a black lab can detect conditions that are not normal or not correct, even though there's no visible mold growth. So kind of interesting. I'd never had an animal or dog actually really hone in on an area where I knew there was a problem and there was definitely a moisture issue. But Zeke the dog knew about it. It was kind of a cool situation. Mike, if I have mold in my home or office, is it my fault?
The truth of the matter is you can contribute to mold growth if the indoor humidity levels become too high, you don't have proper ventilation like we talked about. When you're showering, you're boiling water, cooking, doing laundry, it's really evaporating that water. You may have some leaks inside there. So yeah, we do contribute to mold growth. But if you're paying attention to the humidity levels inside your house, which nowadays technology allows us to have devices in the home that can help us measure that more so than it would have in the past. If you're paying attention to that and you still have a mold problem, or you think you might have a mold problem, it likely isn't your fault. You know, it could be that the blame is somewhere else. So what we do is in those cases, we come out and we perform that assessment and we determine that the cause of the problem is something like a hidden water intrusion you didn't know was happening, a plumbing leak that you didn't know was happening. You put a picture up on the wall and behind that wall, there was a copper piping that was carrying some water to the upstairs bathroom that you didn't know, you nicked it a little bit. Those types of things are not things that you know about. Roof leaks, things of that nature. So a mold assessment consultant can oftentimes come in. We detect those conditions. We can detect if you have an active leak happening. And we go back to those are the things that cause mold growth, that we have a conducive atmosphere for growth. We have food source, organic material, and then we introduce water or moisture into that area. I know it sounds maybe a little salesy, but we always tell people, be proactive, get ahead of it. It's like cancer of the home. Early detection is the key. Get in front of it, hire the service of a professional, and let us come out and take a look.
So Mike, this is the part of the show that I like to ask a question so our listeners can get to know you and your team members a little bit better. What's going on with the socks in your office? You've got some type of a competition with socks. Tell us a little more about that.
That's pretty funny that you guys heard about that. I don't know how that got out, but yeah, absolutely. It started with myself and one of our owners, Nathan. We were actually in a manager's meeting, and it was in my office, and he happened to be sitting across the room from me, and he happened to glance underneath my desk. I will say that I do have pretty strong sock game, if you guys know what that is. You know, I have some really cool socks, multicolored. I have some celebrities on them sometimes. I have a pretty extensive sock collection. My wife would tell you that it's way too extensive. But yeah, so that kind of caught fire. Nathan actually had a pretty cool pair of socks on that day too. So then everybody started upping their sock game a little bit. So now we come in and it's kind of a funny thing that we all compare and talk about. But it really unified us as a team that we all related to that and we all just connected over that. You know, we're like, oh, what you got going on over there? You got some new sock game going on over there? You know, just like one of those talking points for us that we all just kind of connect on. And it was really cool. We actually even at our company event that we had last year, one of our consultants said, well, let's see who has the strongest sock game at this event. And whoever wins, everybody else has got to do 5 push-ups. So he actually went out and had a pair of Mold Inspection Sciences Texas socks made up for that event. And he took the show. So it was pretty cool. We all did our 5 push-ups, but it was a cool thing and something that we connect on down here.
That's fantastic. I like that. Let me ask you, Mike, what is your favorite pair of socks that you have?
So I have a pair of socks with the mugshot picture of Johnny Cash. It actually has his actual mugshot picture on them, and it says Cash on the side. So that's my go-to when somebody says, you know, better bring your sock game tomorrow. So that's usually a winner.
That's pretty strong sock game right there. I like it. May have to find me a pair of Johnny Cash socks.
Craig, if you come to Texas ever, bring your sock game.
I'm going to have to now, for sure.
If you guys want to see a picture of that, you guys can go to our website, and we do have those photos uploaded from our event, and you can actually see how strong our sock game is.
Excellent. I'm definitely going to check that out. I want to see those socks. Well, Mike, any final thoughts?
I think the overarching message here is that in order to properly assess a potential mold problem, the best way to do it is to reach out to a mold professional, schedule that assessment, and have them come out and take a look at it before you do anything. If you smell something, you see something, you think you might have a problem, have a professional come out and take a look at it. Don't try and do it yourself, because sometimes it seems like it's a little bit expensive to hire a professional. Wait till you see what it costs you to hire an amateur, because sometimes that follow-up cost is a lot more costly than it is to just have a professional come out and take a quick look at it. We can save you guys a lot of money on the front end by just giving a proper assessment of what's going on in your home, and find someone like Mold Inspection Sciences that truly cares about you, truly cares about finding the source of that problem and keeping that scope of work limited.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, hey, this has been fantastic. I tell you, very informative. You clearly know your stuff. Mold Inspection Sciences of Texas is definitely the most qualified company, in my opinion, to help clients in Texas determine if there is a mold problem and help them through the steps and the processes. Most people have never been through a mold problem, mold remediation. Really, oftentimes, they just really need somebody to be there to help them, kind of guide them through that process. And that's exactly what you guys do. So thanks, Mike. Again, we appreciate your time today and sharing with us your knowledge and information.
Absolutely, Craig. Thanks for having me out. It was a lot of fun. And if you guys ever need me to come on and share some stories about our experiences again, we'd be happy to do that. And don't forget to step up your sock game if you ever come down to Texas.
Sounds good, Mike. We'll do. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today for this episode of the Secret Life of Mold podcast. If you need help with mold issues in your home or office, we'd love to help. For our Texas location, please call 888-335-MOLD. That's 888-335-6653. Or email contact@moldtx.com. For our locations other than Texas, reach out to our customer care team at 800-619-MOLD. That's 800-619-6653. Or email us at contact@moldsci.com.